Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Our life together is so precious. Together.
Do you remember where you were 30 years ago today? Well, diehard John Lennon fans probably do. They gathered in locations around the world to grieve the death of John Lennon, shot right here in New York. Lennon, of course, one of music's greatest legends, the irascible, brilliant, contrarian Beatle. Well, the first British reporter on the scene of that crime 30 years ago today was Tom Brooke, a radio reporter and freelancer for our partner at the BBC, and he joins us this morning here in the studio. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning to you.
I think it's fair to say that you know exactly where you were 30 years ago today.
John Lennon was killed 2 hours ago. He was returning home with his wife, Yoko Ono, to his home, the apartment building, the Dakota apartment building. And everything is still rather confused, but we gather that he got out of a car and there was an altercation about an autograph. Shots were then fired, several shots. He was very badly wounded and the police squad car took him to hospital and he was pronounced dead upon arrival.
That's Tom Brooke, one of the first, or was the first British radio reporter on the scene, and one of the very first reporters of any description outside of the Dakota 30 years ago when John Lennon was shot. First of all, an amazing sort of recounting of the facts in real time without a pause. Do you remember how you felt?
Well, I did feel I was just doing a job at the time, and the emotion didn't really hit me until well after the reporting. I was doing the reporting from a payphone on the corner of West 72nd Street.
I can see it.
And Columbus Avenue. And I remember there was one moment in that report when I said, well, of course, now he's dead. And the finality of that did hit me. And I thought, well, maybe I'll lose it. But I didn't lose it. I was the right age to be an avid Lennon fan. You know, I was in my mid-20s. I'd grown up with his music. So there was an emotional connection.
Well, you may not have lost it, but the British public basically heard the announcement from you, most of them.
At that time, in the UK, there was no morning television. So radio was the prime conduit. They would have heard it first from the presenter, the anchor person of the Radio Morning News show, the Today program in London, but they pretty swiftly came to me.
You know, this was a story about the loss of the Beatles. It was also the loss of John Lennon, a particular personality of the Beatles who attracted all kinds of controversy. It was also a story about America, in a way. And for you, as a British reporter, sort of all three were sort of equal font in the headlines, I would think.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that you raise, because obviously it was about the death of a man who was a seminal cultural icon. But it was also a story of American violence, because I made some inquiries last week when I was preparing to do these retrospective pieces. And 1 million Americans have died from handgun violence since that day, which is a pretty staggering statistic. So there are American elements to it to do with violence.
And, you know, John Lennon would be the person you would most likely expect to be taken down by some sort of politically ideological zealot. But in fact, it was a senseless act of violence, which in many ways became a big theme in American culture the decades since John Lennon died.
That's very true. I mean, the man who killed him, Mark David Chapman, was a deranged fan, for want of a better term. And he was part of a degree of alienated young people in a way.
Let's listen to another dispatch from Tom Brooks, who was the first British journalist on the scene of the shooting of John Lennon 30 years ago today.
Was Lennon's way of life well known to people? I mean, would people know where he lived and know where to find him?
Yes, they would, especially now, because he's recently become a rather celebrated figure here once again. He's led a very quiet life over the last 5 years ago. But 2 months ago, his new album, which he did with his wife Yoko, called Double Fantasy, was released. There's been a lot of interest, and ironically, the song that is now in the American hit parade is called Starting Over, and that's in the top 10 here.
You know, it reminds me emotionally of I was one of the first reporters on the scene when Princess Diana died in France, and just this spontaneous outpouring of emotion and connections. And in the case of talking about the album being released, and, you know, Lennon was a folk hero in New York, and you could walk up to the Dakota and wave to him if you wanted to.
I think people in New York had a very strong connection with John Lennon at that time. They felt that he was one of their own. And there were iconic images of Lennon which have subsequently emerged, like there's a T-shirt that everybody knows, which has New York City written on it, and another one when he's standing in front of the Statue of Liberty. And so he was a very powerful figure, very much connected with the city.
And when did you have the opportunity in the course of all the reporting? And again, you know, when you got to the scene at the Dakota, there were about 20 reporters or so there. And by the time you left later that night, there was a huge crowd and people leaving makeshift mementos of one kind or another. When did you allow the emotions to overtake you in the course of this whole reporting assignment?
Well, not until the following day, really. I mean, it was an amazingly surreal night because people were arriving at the Dakota. It was a very eerie scene in a way because they'd cordoned off the street. So to begin with, it was silent. Then people came along and they were bearing candles. Some of them had tape recorders in which they were playing Lennon and Yoko Ono music, and they were bringing flowers. So it was a strange scene, and it did feel like a tableau of mourning. But I didn't really feel that until the following day.
And you've stayed here in the States reporting on American culture over the last 30 years, right?
Absolutely. I mean, John Lennon was committed to New York, and I feel the same way, in a way.
What do you make of Yoko's trajectory in the 30 years since?
Well, I think that Yoko has been underrated in a way. I mean, she is a talented artist in her own right. She does some pretty wacky things.
Right.
I mean, and I think that kind of marginalizes her in a way. I mean, there was one interesting thing I saw that she did this summer, which was at the Museum of Modern Art, and it was a simulated 3-minute orgasm that she did. You can go online and see it, and it's an extraordinary thing. But then you think, this is remarkable. This is a 77-year-old woman, and she's still hanging in there, still trying to be creative.
Still bringing back the image of Yoko and John in bed.
Absolutely.
Naked in those old events they used to do, those old happenings.
Which were, in a way, they say that those bed-ins were commercials for peace, and the media absolutely loved it up, and it was effective as a media exercise in terms of theatrics. How much it actually achieved in terms of tangible change is open to question.
Well, we're still imagining there's no war, and imagining world peace in the way that John Lennon taught us to do in his song lyrics. Tom Brooks, thanks so much.
Thank you.
30 years ago, John Lennon left us, but he's still with us. Tom Brooke, radio reporter, first British reporter on the scene 30 years ago when John Lennon was shot, freelancer for our partner, the BBC.